do the pointer, but if something happens where it goes into a stall mode, do you know how to get it out of stall?
I'll be sitting.
You'll be over there.
Keep it from falling.
Okay, good.
This is our council workshop. It's April 26th, 11:30. We've got some more seats down here a little bit, so appreciate everybody coming here and working with us. We've got a little bit of a strange layout here to make everybody, but we've got some more seats down. I feel like kind of in church. Everybody's back. Most Baptist, everybody went to the back rows. So we know the good ones and the bad ones. But appreciate everybody being here. We got a couple topics this afternoon we'll be discussing. In attendance today, we have City Manager Matt Brower, we have Councilman John Priester, Mayor Randy Ewers, myself, Daniel Owen, Councilmember Susie Heimbachel. Miss Rich is going to be absent today. She is out. And Mr. Gwynn, we anticipate that he will be here, so we shall see here shortly. But with that, I'm going to turn over to City Manager Matt Brower.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Can everybody hear me okay? Is the echo, is that working for everyone? Thank you again for being here. Today we have two very important items on the agenda. The first item we're going to discuss is the community development area. Staff is going to be rolling out some new concepts, new ideas, and we're Mark Mundell and Ms. Frieda here for the presentation. And then we're going to transition into a discussion on some golf issues regarding the beautiful golf course. And so with your permission, council members, we go ahead and begin with the community redevelopment areas.
Okay.
Thank you. My name is Mark Mundell. I'm the executive director of municipal development, and I'm going to talk about the proposed new community redevelopment areas today. It's a topic I'm very excited about and I'm very anxious to get into with you. Before we do that, because we're in a new space, just want to point out to everyone, if you need to use the restroom facilities, they're directly behind us. And if you need any help, we have a number of staff members in the audience that can provide assistance. But also, I wanted to mention, before we get started, this space is a working space for us. We have this room and the room next door. The room next door displays some of the ongoing projects that are occurring in the city. But in this space, you notice we have a bunch of art on the wall, beautiful paintings that have been provided to the city for free for display. We have three artists. I'm not sure if they're in the room with us, but one is Millie, Bonnie, and Kazuko. If you're here, if you can stand up. Okay. And perhaps the most important thing, this is all for sale. So we'll move now to the presentation. This work that's being presented today has been prepared by staff and Revitalization Strategies Department. For those of you that aren't aware, this department handles three core areas, redevelopment, which is what we're going to talk about today, economic development, and reinvestment. Our reinvestment program on the private side, public side, our code enforcement, and our CDBG SHIP programs. On the redevelopment side, staff administers the city's current redevelopment area. This facility is located in our community redevelopment area. It includes both downtown and North Mag. Staff also is tasked with implementing the redevelopment projects that are part of those redevelopment plans. For example, the White Chalice redevelopment project downtown is one of those projects. And the downtown parking garage, which is an ongoing effort, we'll have a workshop on May 10th, is another project. We also provide technical assistance to the community and boards. The team on the management side includes Astrid Chopatian, who's sitting here to my right. She's the senior manager for redevelopment. And should the CRAs move forward, the council elects to move forward with the idea of new CRAs, Astrid is tasked with implementing those projects. We also have Melanie Gavorty, who's hiding around the corner. Melanie is involved in our economic development side, and James, who's on our reinvestment side. All those staff are here today as well. So the first question, what is a CRA? CRA is a very flexible tool. that can be used by both cities and counties to remove factors of slum and blight. As I mentioned before, the city currently has one CRA. The conditions that would determine whether an area has slum and blight are varied. Some of the examples are here on the screen. You have dilapidated structure, that's one factor of slum and blight. You can have inadequate street layout or inadequate parking facilities. You can have declining property values, faulty lot layout, properties that have unusual or numerous title effect issues. So there's a number of factors that you can use to qualify an area as a community redevelopment area. Those communities that are interested in implementing CRAs have a very specific process they have to follow that's governed by the Florida Statute, Chapter 163, Part 3. And one of the first steps is the preparation of what's called a finding of necessity. And that is a study that determines whether those conditions of slum and blight exist or not. And that's directed by the city council in this case, if council elects to move forward. Other parts of that process include appointing the agency that will oversee the CRA, as well as developing a plan that outlines the types of projects that are going to be implemented the intent of which will be to remove slum and blight and redevelop the area and encourage new private sector investment. Now, when you create a CRA, you also have the ability to create what is called a tax increment fund. And what that is a fund that's in place that a certain portion of the property taxes are collected and put into that fund. Those dollars can be used to encourage redevelopment and to encourage private sector investment. We're going to talk more about that in just a minute. Some of the recent examples that the city of Ocala has taken on in our CRA include streetscape. You notice the State Route 40 project was done, the Broadway streetscape project downtown were recently done. The city has offered facade grants over a number of years. We just finished the most recent cycle downtown. We've done gateway signs in the North Mag District. You can see the big brick signs. Those were used CRA dollars for those signs. A variety of other uses. In other communities, they've used CRA dollars for many different things. They've offered rehabilitation loans to businesses. They've built parking garages. They've done property assemblage and new parks. They've done other infrastructure improvements. They've also used CRA dollars as incentives to developers to make private investment in those communities. Typically, CRAs are established for 30 years. There are some variables there where it can be extended to 40 years or longer in some cases, but I'd say on average about 30 years is the typical CRA area. And again, the TIF revenues are typically used in most cases for infrastructure projects that will leverage and encourage private sector investment. They're not best used for social services. In other words, often when you create a CRA, it's in areas that have demonstrated slum and blight, and there's usually a lot of other problems that come along with it. You may have high crime rates, you may have issues of affordable housing, you may have homelessness, illiteracy, a number of issues. But CRA tools are not really, the CRA itself is not best suited to solve all those other social issues. It's best used when it's focused on infrastructure and trying to encourage private sector investment. Ocala's current CRA, this map shows a number of different areas, but I'm going to try to show you that here at this point. This is the current CRA right here, the North Bend portion and the downtown portion. See if I can get my arm shake. Okay, these other areas that you see on this map show other areas in the city that are not CRA areas, but are other incentive type areas. We have the urban job tax credit area, the Brownsville area is this dark blue outline, and then we have the enterprise zone, which is the most newly created area in the city. We'll talk more about that later. So what's the CRA trust fund, the TIF, that we mentioned before? This is very rudimentary in how it works. When you set up a CRA, you essentially cap the taxes that are collected in the base year. Okay, so whatever the taxes are in that base year, for the next 30 years, the taxing authorities will receive those taxes for the next 30 years. But as the assessed values in an area increase, that incremental increase, 95% of that typically is returned to the trust fund to be used for implementing redevelopment. Those funds can be used again for a variety of things aimed at removing slum and blight, often used for infrastructure. One of the things I want to make sure is clear to everyone is a CRA and the trust fund that can be created do not represent new taxes. They are not new taxes. The people that are in the North Bend District and the downtown pay the same taxes they would if there wasn't a CRA here. It's just that the collection of those taxes, instead of being spent outward in the county and other places, have to be spent back here in the CRA. Also, I want to make sure you understand that if you set up a CRA, the water management districts and the school boards are exempt from having to contribute to the TIF. So here's a simple mathematical example. Let's say that the current assessed value of an area is $100 million. And let's assume there's a 95% collection rate. If you apply the county's millage, and these millage numbers are not, I don't think they're the most current, but they're the ones I have handy. Let's say that the county's millage is 3 mils. The county, if you apply 3 mils to the $100 million taxable value, that would be a 95% collection rate. The county would collect $364,000 as a result of that. In the city, you apply the city's millage rate, the city would collect $533,000. This is without a CRA. Now let's say we go ahead and set a CRA, okay? And let's assume that there's a 3% increase in tax, in taxable value. The property values are increasing at 3%. So that increased incremental value now is $3 million. Again, apply the county's millage rate and the city's millage rate, you can see what the collection would be, the incremental increase collection would be. But notice what happens at the bottom. Not only does the city's portion of those taxes go into the trust fund, but as well as the county's. So you have now a total of $28,000 being deposited back into that trust fund for redevelopment. The city and county continue to collect their base numbers for 30 years, okay? But it's the incremental numbers that now get put into the trust fund to effectuate redevelopment. So why new CRAs? Why would we want to consider doing this? Well, the ongoing negative effects of the economy has resulted in a number of foreclosures, as you know. It's been a continued drag on our community. We have a number of business vacancies. We have job loss, a number of other factors that continue to add to slum and blight in our community. The CRA represents, as I mentioned before, a very flexible tool that can help stimulate private sector investment, create new jobs, remove slum and blight. As you probably are aware, some of you I know here are on this committee, the 2035 vision plan that the city is embarking on, so the multiple year effort of our planning consultants, Billy PhD Miller Selling, is to try to develop a future vision for Ocala. After that vision is developed, it's basically been developed at this point. Now we're in the process of looking at sub area plans, looking at what changes in the comprehensive plan we need to make and in our land development regulations to implement that vision. Policy statements and code changes are very important, and they will represent greater flexibility to the private sector to want to invest in our community. But one of the things that's missing is where are the dollars to implement on the public side the infrastructure improvements that are necessary. A CRA is a great tool that can be used to implement the 2035 vision plan. The other reason to consider it is currently by statute, the city has the ability to create a CRA basically by right on its own. As long as the area qualifies as slum and blight, the finding of necessity is sufficient to document that. The decision is local, it's made by city council. It doesn't require the Department of Community Affairs approval. It doesn't require other agencies to approve it. Now, there's a specific process you have to go through. You have to notice the taxing authorities and what your intentions are. They have the opportunity to provide comment and present competing interests or plans that council would have to ultimately decide. But then right now in time, council still has that ability. Over the last several years, there has been bills floated at the legislative level that would change that ability and restrict council from being able to do that or put greater limitations on council's ability. So that's one other reason to be thinking about doing it now. So let's start talking about what's proposed. That's the background. That kind of gives you the big picture of how things work. Now let's talk specifically to what we're thinking about. Staff has been working over a number of months looking at a variety of areas within the city limits that could qualify. Again, city limits, we only have jurisdiction over our boundaries. We're not going to look outside the city limits. What could qualify as potential CRAs? As a result of that research, it has focused staff to look primarily at the primary corridors leading in and out of our city. State Road 200, State Road 40, US 27, Pine Avenue. And staff has identified three large study areas that we believe have the potential of qualifying as CRAs. We also believe that there's enough evidence in those study areas to not only qualify the whole study area, State Road 40 west of I-75. Here's the map. Again, let's focus on this one here. You see a green area. This large boundary is the study area that's been looked at. And this boundary inside of that study area is staff's first pass at a suggestion of what an actual CRA boundary might look like. All of this is subject to change. It could be molded, it could be changed. Areas could be added, subtracted, but again, they have to meet the conditions of slum and blight as documented in finding of necessity. So we have study area one, study area two is the area in purple, study area three is this area in brown, and the proposed CRA examples are smaller subsets of those areas. The tan area, blue outline, is the entire city limits. One of the limitations the city has is you can't create a CRA that exceeds 80% of your city limits. These areas don't come anywhere close to being 80% of the city limits. This is, it's hard to see, I know, from where you're sitting, but again, staff has done a lot of research to try to understand what are the variables involved. This is just one of the maps that we've been looking at. This is study area number one, so this is the big outline. You can't see from where you're sitting, but there's a dark green line that outlines what could be perhaps a CRA. This is just from a land use perspective. You know, what are the land uses in that area? These are some photographs from that area. It's hard to get from where you're sitting, but if you were closer, you would probably notice all of these areas. Some of these are vacant gas stations on State Road 40. This is the Albertsons. You have a shopping plaza where the primary tenant has left, in this case, an Albertsons. What impact does that have to the rest of the shopping center? A long-term impact if they don't get another tenant to fill that space or multiple tenants. This is the former Cody's restaurant. You can see it's been burnt and dilapidated. We have some other structures that show symptoms of slum and blight. This is the same type of map, land use map for study area two. This is what we're referring to as large as the West Ocala area, although it includes a piece of State Road 40. Again, this orange area map is the existing CRA, North Bank downtown. These are some photos from that area, and you'll probably notice many of them. Many of them show vacant buildings, underutilized buildings, dilapidated structures, vacant lots that could otherwise be put to better use, properties in some cases which have been used for commercial purposes, but really aren't developed as commercial properties. They don't have adequate parking, they don't have drainage, they don't have signage, so on and so forth. Same type of analysis for Area 3. This is west of I-75, within the city limits on State Road 40. Similar photos for those areas. Again, vacant buildings, some dilapidated structures, vacant parcels that could be otherwise developed or haven't previously developed, or really ready for redevelopment, but there's no reason for them to redevelop right now. There's nothing there to support. This is an example of, as I said before, there are many projects you can implement. As long as it's really tied to redevelopment and it's in your plan, you can pretty much use, and if the taxing authority has agreed to your plan, you pretty much can use TIF revenues to support it. This is just one basic idea. Many communities use streetscape projects with TIF dollars. So what this does is it looks at, in this case, just Pine Avenue. This is a very high-level analysis of just looking at what could happen on Pine Avenue if we wanted to try to add some streetscaping into Pine. So this is the current condition. This is what could be proposed for that area. This could be not just Pine Avenue. You could look at State Road 40, State Road 200, US 27. How could you add more greenscape, bike lanes? What are the things you could do that would not impede business, but help like beautify the corridor? So here's a snapshot of Pine again. This is what it looks like today. Sea of asphalt, center suicide turn lane, not a lot of uniformity in signage, no landscaping, and you know, you could use the TIF dollars to do something like this. And again, you have to be very careful how you get it. You want to be very selective if you use TIF dollars, because you don't want to hurt businesses, but there's many examples in communities where communities have done just this kind of work, just one isolated project, and it actually helps develop and attract more business to the area. You can see where businesses, actually their revenues have increased in part as a result of the beautification of that area. Another benefit of doing something like this is it's often difficult to get across from one side of the street to the next, but if you have a landscape area where pedestrians have a short period of time where they can wait until the traffic passes, it helps to serve as a traffic calming device, as a way to connect different communities and different sides of the street together. So that's just one example. I'm going to talk a little bit now about some proposed incentive programs. Before we do that, I'd like to help you understand. What we're talking about with the CRAs today is separate. It's not necessarily connected to the incentive programs. Okay? You can create a CRA and not create new incentive programs. But the reason we're talking about this is we believe that if our goal in a CRA is to remove some of blight and encourage private sector investment, that a CRA tool is a good tool to do that. The only problem is CRAs are typically a long-term tool. It may take many years to develop tax increment funds to make those improvements. So one of the ways you can help to accelerate that is by creating new incentive tools that will encourage companies and businesses to come in and invest money and fill vacant buildings and pay taxes and use electric and create jobs and invest in upgrading their properties. So that's why staff is introducing or exploring the potential idea of new incentive programs. And there's four of them that we wanted to talk to you about today. One is a development fee discount program. One's an electric discount program. The other two are a lease discount and an environmental mitigation program. Staff is suggesting that if council has an interest in these, and there could be many more, we could add other concepts. These are just the four ideas we're throwing around right now, that these programs would be available in defined areas, and they would be used primarily for businesses that are opening businesses in vacant structures, or businesses that are expanding their business, or redeveloping their property. The defined areas that staff is suggesting are the enterprise zone, the Brownsville area, the urban job tax credit area, and any community redevelopment areas the city has. So remember I showed you that map earlier that had those other incentive zones. Those are all the areas we're talking about. Staff is suggesting that these programs, that participating in these programs would be limited to two of the four. So if your business, you can only take advantage of two of the four at any one time. And the thought there is that we would stress the financial resources associated with the programs that have opened them to more companies than fewer companies. That the maximum time you can be in a program is 5 years, depending on which program you're in. The development fee and the electric discount programs are not necessarily programs where we have to budget money in a pot. We could elect to go that route, but the basic way they're constructed is that there are a discount on fees that you would have had to pay if you're now having to incur new fees. So, for example, if you're doing a renovation of a building and you have to pay permit fees, if you weren't doing a renovation, you wouldn't have had to pay the fees in the first place. But if you're paying the fees, then this program would be a way to discount the total cost of those fees. You still pay some, but maybe not all. It's the same thing with the electric discount. If you're adding new load to our system, you're going to have to pay an increased electric bill or a new electric bill. We wouldn't otherwise have had that electric revenue, so we're able to offer you a discount on some of that electric cost. The lease discount in the environmental program would require, in part, some either general fund or CRA financial support, and I'm going to talk more about that here as we go through the month. Okay, the development fee program. A few years ago, the city adopted an ordinance that it's an incentive program to encourage affordable housing. And that program has some dollars in it. As building permits are paid, the city takes a portion of the building permit, puts it in a pot of money, and when affordable housing projects come in, they apply to this fund, they can be eligible to use those dollars to pay water sewer connection charges or impact fees, other improvements that are required as part of the process, development charges, sidewalk improvements, a variety of things. Those dollars can be used for. Right now, affordable housing is not really the critical issue that we're facing as a community. We have a lot of affordable housing in our community right now. So staff is thinking that perhaps we should think about taking that ordinance and rewriting the ordinance to expand it, still keep affordable housing in there because, again, as the economy ebbs and flows, affordable housing is going to become an issue again. But right now, if the issue is job creation and redevelopment, then maybe we add those components to that ordinance and make it available to, again, businesses that are locating in vacant structures or expanding or redeveloping their property. Now, the electric discount program, again, this idea would apply to the same type of situations. It would have to demonstrate new load to our system, new electrical load. It's also, of course, if council decides it would like to investigate this further, it would ultimately be subject to Public Service Commission approval. As you know, the Public Service Commission is very keenly monitors utilities. They want to make sure that one rate class, let's say residential consumers, are not subsidizing the rates of another rate class, let's say commercial users, or vice versa. However, they do allow for short periods of time communities to adopt, for economic development purposes, a program where you can discount or offer some electrical incentive to encourage economic development. Typically, it's on the one of the programs that we've looked at from other communities. It's been about a 5-year basis. Everyone's a little bit different how they're constructed, but there have been some approved by the Public Service Commission. In this case, we're recommending a maximum term of 5 years, and it'd be a credit on the customer's bill, monthly bill. It's basically an automatic system. We have it built in to our accounting system. If you're a consumer using 0 to 149 kilowatt hours, and this is new load, and that represents a 10% increase in new load, you'd be eligible for a $100 discount on your monthly bill. And you can see as this plays out, 20% load, 30% load, these are all the different rate classifications of what you'd be eligible for. And you can, a pretty automatic process. If there's obviously a lot of conditions, if your new load doesn't materialize after, you know, 2 periods in a row, then you can be kicked out of the program. But there's a lot of details that staff has to still work through, but this is a basic concept we'd like to discuss. The third is the lease discount program. There's been some communities that have used CRA dollars it doesn't have to be CRA dollars, but some communities that have, where they have discounted leases. They've said, okay, if you have a tenant and they sign a 2-year lease, we will pay a portion of their lease for a period of time. In this case, we're suggesting perhaps that they would have, we would pay up to a quarter of their business's monthly rent, up to $250 per month. Again, assuming fund availability, and there would be job requirements attached to this. They'd have to have a 2-year lease, create at least 2 jobs, they'd have to be in operation for that full month to receive the benefit. We also are suggesting that they would need to work with a small business development center, because in many cases there are going to be smaller businesses, many mom and pop type businesses. They need to work with SBDC so that this isn't money that's being given where it may not result in any real significant impact to the business. They may go out of business. We want to try to do what we can to ensure that they're going to grow and stay in business. So that is part of the reason why we're looking at trying to tie it to the Small Business Development Center or the Chamber of Commerce's Business Accelerator. If they get that project going, there'll be special resources and tools available for those tenants, and that may be an opportunity to explore there. The Environmental Mitigation Program, staff is proposing that the city apply for a brownfield cleanup revolving loan fund program. We could be eligible to receive about $1 million. It's essentially a grant to the city, and it would help us capitalize the revolving loan fund. The thought is, the city has participated for many years in a brownfield program that gives us funds to do phase 1 and phase 2 analyses of properties. It's been a very successful program in Ocala, but that's only do the analysis work to tell us is there contamination or not. We have not really had dollars to do a lot of cleanup work if there is any contamination or any environmental related issues. This program allows you to do that. We've applied for the phase 1 program again. We should hear in the next few months if we're going to get that. And we could use that program as well as perhaps this program to do a sort of a turnkey package to help analyze if there's environmental issues and try to help those issues get cleaned up. It can be used for a variety of things. There is a 20% match requirement, but that doesn't have to be cash. It can be cash. It could be in-kind services. It could be money that banks put up to match this. It could be a lot of different things that you can use as a 20% match. Typically, they're offered as low-interest, short-term loans to businesses, but you can use some of that money as a grant to a business. So we see a lot of potential here, a lot of opportunity. If you drive around town, you see a lot of vacant gas stations. I can't tell you all the reasons why they're vacant. There's a number of reasons. In some cases, some of them, the tanks haven't been brought up to standards, and others, they're not built with convenience stores, so that's a big part of that business model. There could be many reasons. You know, what if we go into some of those that have environmental contamination and get the tanks cleaned up and replaced? What if some of those that are not, the highest and best use is not a gas station, we get the tanks out of the ground, we tear down the building, and now we have a new property that's available for redevelopment? There's all kinds of possibilities. Right, now I'm bringing it back full circle to the CRAs. So what are the next steps? If we want to move forward with CRAs, this is the basic timeline that staff would envision. It's not a requirement to create an CRA advisory board, but what you've seen so far has really been just staff's ideas about what might be a CRA. One approach would be to try to identify citizens in each of those areas and establish a board, and the board would help staff develop the findings of necessities to really fine-tune what the area would be, to bring all that back to council for a vote, and then if it moves forward, to actually help us develop the redevelopment plan. We don't have to do that. We can make this a staff function alone or hire consultants. There's a number of options. But once we decide to go forward, we have to do a finding of necessity. If you like what you see in front of you, we think we can prepare findings of necessity in about 60 days for those areas. You've got to adopt the agency, which would be city council. You've got to go through a planning process of development plans, minimum of 90 days. It can take much longer. In fact, in area number two, which is the West Metallic area, staff is recommending that we actually work through VHB Miller Sellin, our consultant, to work with the citizens, because there's more issues in that community that the community wants to address, I think, than maybe in some of the other areas that we're looking at. And so that may take a little bit longer, but kind of really work those issues out and figure out how we can deal with some of them through CRA. And then, of course, ultimately, adopting the trust fund. That's all that staff has here.
Council, have any questions for Mark right now? Mayor Jameson.
Yeah. Mark, when the millage, what happens if the millage rate goes down? I mean, has the millage rate changed, and say we go through like a negative perspective?
Yes.
And you just don't put anything in the trust
fund? That's it. In fact, when we created Ocala here, that's exactly what happened for the first few years. There was no revenue to collect.
No revenue to collect, okay. And, if the sun sets, you know, 30-year sunsets and the money's there, the council then can either choose to continue the CRA or what would happen to the money, the revenue?
Our existing CRA, I don't recall the exact specifics, Mayor, but it was set to expire and council approved to extend it to 2038, if I recall. So there currently that process exists where you can extend it. There has always been legislative discussions about changing the statute, so I don't know what would happen if we create it now. We have the ability to extend it beyond 3 years in the future, but as it exists today, we could.
Okay. And as the millage changes, say millage rate goes up and property values go down, and we stay maybe a net revenue neutral, how does that really affect the trust fund? Does it kind of adjust, or you know what I'm kind of...
Yeah, I do. It's a number of factors. At the end of the day, if there's no new increment, regardless of how we get there,
right,
if it means that the millage rate has been lowered or that the property assessed values have lowered, and however we get there, if there's no increment, there's no increment.
Okay, so the CRA is based on you're collecting a certain revenue dollar, and you're going to cap that for 30 years.
Yeah, we will cap one. The year we establish the CRA, that revenue will be capped for the next 30 years. If council elects to increase the millage rate in a CRA in the future, it's the same thing. It may just accelerate the amount of revenue that's collected.
What happens on like an annexation? Some of these areas were covered. Is the boundary drawn, or can you then absorb a piece of property into that?
Yeah, but you have a lot of great questions.
anybody else have anything they would like to ask?
You said it, you got questions.
You start getting a little bit of gray area. When we set the CRA boundary, it's going to have a legal description, and that's going to be the CRA boundary. City always has the opportunity to go back, and we have to go through the same process to expand the boundary or whatever we want to do. It gets a little more complicated if now all of a sudden you bonded money, you pledge TIF revenues against that. That starts getting a little more complicated. If If a portion of the city annexes, that's currently unincorporated, annexes to the city decides it would like to make that a CRA, we have to go through the same exact process again. Now, I'm not fully answering your question, but I'm trying to explain that there's a lot of variables that are there's a lot of gray area. The city could theoretically create a CRA in the county, an unincorporated city limits, but we'd have to have the county's approval to do that. The only reason I bring that up is you recall in that project, we had talked about maybe a joint CRA. There's opportunities for all kinds of different things, but when you start getting outside of the normal box, they get a little bit more complicated. I think
they had
another part that I may not answer.
No, that's
all. Mr. Wynn? Mark, let me ask you a question. From the perspective of what the mayor talked about, if you're a business owner, you're trying to locate your business in a certain area, what are my advantages of being a CRA as opposed to, we just create an enterprise zone? We have the tax credits, all kinds of advantages to be there. Why would I want to be in a CRA? What are the advantages?
Multiple answers to that question. Let's first talk about the enterprise zone. If you are a business and you look at the enterprise zone, those benefits are in large part state benefits.
Right.
You have to be incorporated, and those benefits are typically like tax credits that you're going to get from the state. Okay. You also get in Ocala, we have adopted an ordinance that allows you to get a 50% reduction in the local utility tax as well. Okay. But that's it. And that's good, but that's it. One of the benefits of being in a CRA, I think, from a business perspective, is you know where the community's headed. A CRA talks more than just job creation, job development. It talks about community development. And so there's a plan, and a business can look at the plan and say, I know where the city's headed. It's got a 30-year plan, and these are the 10 projects, and they've implemented 3 and 4 already, and now we're moving on to 5. They can see the investment that's being put into the community, and it paints the future. And again, because the CRA is so flexible, you can use those dollars for a lot of different things, whereas the enterprise zone, it's only related to those tax credits. Now, let me add this to the comment. All of those programs are independent of each other. So if you're in business and you locate in a CRA that's also an urban job tax credit area and a brownfield area and an enterprise zone, you can take advantage of all the programs.
Just as far as the direction the city's headed, just thinking about just like our master plan downtown. When I move here, this is the direction we're headed, so yes, I want to be there. So. Okay, just some things.
Susie, did you have anything? Is anyone in the audience any questions for Mark? Anyone in the audience? Now's your time. All right. Do we want to get this on our agenda? Matt, you want to witness the next steps? We just got it laid out here that we want
to. Actually, what the staff is seeking this afternoon is the council's support for not only the CRA, but the redevelopment tool that Mark called up. A thumbs up, a thumbs down as to whether you would like staff to continue working these issues. At some point, we'll bring it back when they're fully vetted and ready to do so. But right now, we just want to gain your level of support and we'll just have staff continue investing time on developing these proposals.
I've got two thumbs.
Mr.
Priester, would you like to have some staff just to continue to vet this out
and
see what we got? Okay. I think, Matt, you get some direction. Let's keep plugging along and trying to glean through some of this information and as we see fit, get it to an agenda item. I very much like the reaching out to each. The CRA is the one question I do have. As we go through this, would we be able to do multiple? When I say multiple, from a staff time, say council says we like 1 and 3. Can we? I mean, is staff able to handle and to where we can, not just one?
As I mentioned before, in area 2, I think there's a lot more issues to vet in that process, which is why I think VHB is probably the best suited to lead that effort. At this point in time, I believe staff are going to take on the responsibility, and I say staff, I'm probably looking up street at here and her team, take on the responsibility of trying to move forward with the area 1 and 3 or however those things shape. I will tell you, however, we have an expert in the audience, also Mr. Don Delaney, who is a consultant, and there are many consultants in our community, outside our community, that provide different levels of assistance for different components. There may be some steps process that we might look to out of our budgets, try to hire a consultant to do a piece of it to help us out. But I do think we have the capacity in house to take on the lion's share of the load.
And I was going to ask you right now, so you just you keep plugging forward. This is just going to be sort of in-house right now. We'll continue to do it at a staff level, and then you'll obviously let council be aware when you feel like you need some outside consulting and then bringing that forth on agenda.
Yeah, our hope again today is to just share with you the ideas to enhance our toolbox.
Yep.
And these, I think, are some pretty good ideas worthy of some additional staff time, investment, energies. And so we will be coming back to you again in the future as we get closer to defining these projects, seeking additional maybe outside support. This is essentially just probably the second step of many we've got to take to really get this flushed out, placed in the toolbox.
What is the time frame? What is some next steps? I mean, when would we be having another discussion on this?
I think I need to give it Matt and find out, look at the calendar. I know we've got a number of big projects coming up.
We've got a few things.
Yeah,
we've got
a couple.
CRAs may tend to get more time to define themselves,
yeah.
But the other tools, RDA tools, might come in a little bit faster.
Okay. We
put our hands around those quicker, and we can really define this quicker.
If I might add one other comment, just so you know, personally, of all the projects we're working on, this is the one that most excites me. And the reason is because the other projects are very important. And many of them are long-term, some of them are more short-term. A company deal, we want to get jobs in the next year or two. But in my opinion, this is a machinery that we can create that, if it's tuned properly, can help hit a lot of singles, a lot of small job creation from a lot of companies that could really ultimately evolve into something very large, and again, implementing that 2035 vision. So I think this is, it may take a little time, but I think it's worth it.
Yeah. Everyone? Name and address for the record, ma'am. You know how it is.
Good afternoon. Natalie Haynes, 4275 Northwest 80th Street, Oklahoma, Florida. My concern is when the council get ready to make their decision, will the residents of the Ocala community have an input on what areas they think should be considered for CRA?
Absolutely. I mean, that's what you saw there, Bell, the process there of the boards that were going to be established. Staff's going to continue this. I think you'll probably be, and hope you're involved, that we'll have the boards set up for each. And I think that's what I saw on the slide, that you're going to go into from residents to businesses to sit across the board and try to get a wide variety of a board created. So that'll definitely happen. Anyone else in the audience? Any other last comments? Yeah, you know I'm always going to look to you. I appreciate you personally. If you got anything that you want to add, I know you've been, we sit right here in the middle of your neck of the woods here, and a lot of great things that y'all have been able to accomplish. Any comments that you want to add real quick before we shut this one down?
I'm Clark Yandel.
You're going to have to come to that microphone, and I'm sorry.
Make it get
Not only am I going to call on you, I'm going to make you walk.
Good afternoon, I'm Clark Daniels, and I operate a business in Anchor, 4 North Main Avenue. 12 years ago, Floyd Hirschberger and I had an opportunity to start our CRA, which we knew was part of the downtown CRA, but it was separated. We're a different kind of neighborhood. I want to tell the citizens, you guys really don't realize what benefits the CRA is going to offer. We're just thrilled. We have a lot of work left to do in our CRA, redevelopment areas. We have areas of slum and blight still that exist. But you know, you just can't do everything. We just work at it with piecemeal. But I would encourage this council to embrace the CRAs, all of them if you will, get started and move them. There's benefits that just continue to grow and go. Things change with the state. The CRAs continue to go, and we're in a little bit of a slump now economically, but things are going to get better. It's not going to be that long. And then we'll have the funds that we'll generate that we can use. We're also blessed to have Mark on now. Mark knows his business. You guys can put your faith in where CRAs are concerned. We've been grateful to have been able to work with Mark since you're right here.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments from council for staff before we move on here? Anything else? All right, Matt, have you got some, you get some direction?
We've got a marching order. We appreciate that direction. Thank you.
Okay. With that, we will move on. I'm going to turn it over to you again. We have some golf issues, so.
I'm going to invite Kathy Trout to come down and speak to us about some golf issues. Kathy, before you begin,
you'll recall that we did a couple different times reorganize and settled on a system where golf was, still is a division of the Recreation and Parks Department, primarily for the administrative and management support that we knew we couldn't afford to purchase separately through the golf program. The second recommendation was that the city should contemplate the issuance of a bond to fund. I knew that was going to happen. Here.
Just a truck.
How much is that? That's great.
Yeah,
see?
Yeah.
All right, we did do this. We had a beautiful award-winning renovation at Ocala Golf Club. The third was that we should invest in information systems. We were on a very antiquated ticket system at the time, and so we now have a point-of-sale system that helps us tremendously in not only the day-to-day operations, but in collection of data that we can use for marketing and adjustments to operations. Fourth recommendation was that dramatic changes in rates should be made. You'll recall that this included non-resident fees, which I think most of us would call a disaster, and also that our tournament groups and outings should be charged a premium, and we managed to run off hundreds of golfers with that recommendation. So we've reversed both of those, even though we did give them a try. The fifth recommendation was that excess space at Ocala Golf Club and Finance should be rented. We did issue an RFP to try to rent space at both of those and didn't have any takers at the time. And we continue to look at opportunities for utilization of the excess space at Ocala Golf Club. From that, we developed a strategic action plan. So we purchased the point of sale system. We have better data collection from that. We have a pretty phenomenal website. We engage in social media and email marketing. We have an online TV system. We now even have an online store. New staff is hired. We have a heavy focus on customer service. We did invest in the infrastructure at Ocala Golf Club. We hired a professional grounds maintenance company, Valley Crest. I didn't mention Jason. He's not here today. But Valley Crest does a phenomenal job on the maintenance and has really kept us at a much improved standard. We did need a competitive rate structure. You recall that years ago we couldn't even change our rates by 50 cents without city council getting, you know, filling the chambers and hearing about it. We need to be in a position where we can float with the market. We need to regularly be able to see what our competitors are doing, and we're there. And that's one of the many positive things that we did get from this business plan. And then we wanted to reduce the annual loss to the taxpayer. So we contracted out, we actually leased Pinos for a net even operation, and we sold the East 9 to help us cover any losses through the construction at Ocala Golf Club and through the business plan years that we expected to have a loss. So anytime we evaluate a business or system, we need to know what our market realities are. So just quickly, I want to hit on the national market realities. Golf has reached an apex, and the number of golfers has remained stagnant. In the next decade, the National Golf Foundation projects that 500 to 1,000 golf courses will close. If we remain open, that's good news for us. The number of golfers is actually expected to increase by 1%, which is about the same as the growth in population. And the number of rounds is expected to increase by 50%. It's important to note that that increase in the number of rounds is expected to come from the baby boomers. And we know that senior citizens tend to pay about 20% lower than rack rate when they golf. So it doesn't necessarily equate to the same percentage in increase in revenues. One of the reasons that the number of golfers has remained stagnant is it's an expensive sport to get involved in, it's expensive to stay in, and because people don't have as much time on their hands, people are more family focused, and so that affects the market everywhere. A survey by Golf Convergence nationally asked what are the primary barriers that prevent you from playing the game more often. 75% of the people said that time was the largest barrier. That same survey showed money as the second barrier, and the National Golf Foundation statistics prove that to be true. it's important to know when the economy takes a dive, and of course that wasn't expected when we wrote our business plan 5 years ago, but when it does, golf is going to be impacted because it's a discretionary expense, and so it's directly related to the economy. The National Conference Board Consumer Research Center indicates that 36% of Americans have no discretionary income, so that certainly affects our play statistic. From this data, you can see that what does a golfer look for when they're trying to decide which course they want to play? This is the type of statistic that works in our favor because we have a phenomenal course in regard to conditioning, and our price is very reasonable. So the value that you get at our golf course is pretty good. So we expect for people to make a decision to come to play our course when they can play a comparable course, and they're going to pay more money for it. But the local market conditions have a larger impact on our course performance than the macroeconomics of the business of golf in general. So it's important for us to look at what are we facing here locally, knowing that our demographic is different and our supply is different. There's 22 golf courses located within 15 miles of Ocala Golf Club and 52 courses within 30 miles of Ocala Golf Club. So competition's fierce, and we know that our customers are always looking for the best price that they can get. And then we have to look at demand. Traditionally, golf is a game of the upper and middle class, and the age of the golfer impacts what they're willing to pay. So looking at those statistics, the income base of the population within 15 miles of Ocala Golf Club is 22% below the national average, and 23% of Ocala players are older than the national average. The reason it's important for us to understand this is we got to know who we're dealing with, and we have to cater to that. We have to be willing to provide them with the golf experience that they're looking for and at the prices that they're willing to pay for. So that's our review of the business plan and our market realities, and now we have to hopefully move forward. Pine Oaks Golf Course, we did contract operations through June of 2010 with some extensions. We have built in a maintenance liability cap in that contract. We left ourselves the option to terminate for economic development purposes, and there's a profit sharing clause in there should Clark get out there and make a fortune, he's got to share this. And speaking of Clark, he did intend to be here, but he had a PGA meeting and said that he's available to any of you if you want to speak to him individually, and that he knows he has a report due to us in August on his success at the golf course. But he has very positive reports. This is what our estimated annual fiscal impact for Ocala Golf Course is. This is what we expect to be on the hook for every year, and of course we have the water and sewer contribution that would offset that and then some. And then we have our award-winning Ocala Golf Club. As you know, Ocala Golf Club's renovation won the 2010 Legacy Award for Best Renovation by the Golf Course Builders Association. So here's the painful part. Our operating loss is projected, using our six-month numbers, our operating loss is projected at about $87,000. When you factor in the debt service and the non-departmental services, such as our facilities and risk management costs, our expected loss would be about $332,000. I will point out that I feel pretty comfortable that this is the worst-case scenario. We did have quite a few of our members who didn't renew their membership, but they're still at our course playing every day, which means they're paying daily greens fees. So that's going to play out for us through the summer as they continue to play at rag rates as opposed to under membership. And just to give you an example of how other municipal golf courses are doing during these tough times, 42% report that they are self-sustaining, however, 82% report that they have deferred maintenance or capital improvement needs. And so the way that those statistics read is basically that people are deferring costs in order to report that they're self-sustaining. And I talked a little bit about being able to float with the market on our rates. And so this is an exercise we go through pretty regularly just to see where our rates are in comparison to who we consider to be our competitors. The Silver Spring Shores is probably the one we compare ourselves to most as far as we know our customers go there. And so we look at that rate and we see, why such a large disparity? Why aren't we able to pull $48? Well, what we know is they also aren't able to pull $48. They regularly run a $10 off coupon, and so the golfers play $38 at that course. So we ask what their rates are, but then we also have to search through the papers and online and see what kind of coupon and marketing they're doing to bring those rates down. Because we could mistakenly set our rates up there thinking we can demand that, and in fact we would be able to. The National Golf Foundation has a formula for success, and it's a list of the right things that we need to be successful. I'm not going to read through that, but one of the important things I want to emphasize is that maintaining customer data and using that data to target market and to stay in touch with our golfer, we know, is extremely important in an area that we need to emphasize in the immediate future. And this is some of the things that we're doing right now. I am going to run through these. We're implementing programs designed to help us collect that golfer data. We're negotiating reductions in maintenance services. And just want to point out that we work very closely with Valley Crest in preparing these reductions. It's about $35,000, and have been assured by them that there will be no impact on course conditions. It's important to us to be able to maintain the investment that we've made in that course. So that those contract reductions will come to City Council probably the end of May for you to review. And then we're continuing to implement programs designed to grow the game. We have the Get Golf Ready program. We've talked about the First Tee program. Golf University is important to get kids involved in the game at a young age at our course, not only because they'll develop that loyalty to the course. When you grow up on a course, you tend to be more loyal to it. And then also getting underrepresented populations involved in the sport. We're evaluating in-house food and beverage options. This is an area that we know that we expect we can do better at as a revenue center, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that in a later slide. Networking Canvas is involved in the Emerging Leaders Program at the Chamber and is hosting their meetings monthly. There's about 250 young adults, professionals involved in that organization. Again, a group that you want involved, they pay higher rack rates, they're willing to put out a little more money at the golf course, so it's important to keep that group at your facility. We're issuing a variety of surveys, targeted and general. It's good to know what people think about your course in general, but it's also good to find out what they thought about that last golf experience they just had. That's where you get down, you drill down to the details, and it helps us improve customer service and course conditions. We have just prepared a strategic marketing plan that really is going to help us focus on all these other points. So it has some measurable criteria in there that's going to help us keep on track. Creating new experiences. You know, Candace recently, in partnership with the Emerging Leaders Group, started a low golf program. So it's, again, trying to engage those young professional adults in something that's after hours, and that is an experience different from what every other golf course is providing. And then getting creative and providing programs designed for that golfer who doesn't have discretionary time. And we talked a little about the fact that we know that's an issue. So, for example, in the mornings, we're now offering a 9-hole tee time. Before, we couldn't do that because we were putting golfers out on one side, and Valley Crest is still maintaining and preparing the other side. But they've got very creative in having picks ready so that we can put 9-holers off the back at the same time we're putting 18-holers off the front. That's a big deal because a lot of people just don't have 5 hours to give to the game in the morning. So basically, in solidifying a strategic vision for Ocala Golf Club, these are the three questions I feel like need to be answered, and I'm sure you'll have your own, but we need to decide what role workforce play in our community? What level of support are we willing to provide to that? And then we need to talk about if we should consider other options. So what role does the course play in our community? It's a valuable landmark of local historic significance akin to the City Auditorium and Marion Theater. There are just some things that our community gives value in. I think they've stepped up and shown that they do value the historic significance of some of our landmarks. For those of you who don't know, the Ocala Golf Club was constructed in 1930 and opened at the Highlands Hotel Golf Course, the first round of golf on January 1st, 1931. And in July of 1944, the city purchased the course to protect it from closure due to the lack of play that was associated with World War II. So almost the same situation that we kind of find ourselves in now is the same type of environment that we were in when we took the course and to try to protect it from closure. The Ocala Golf Club has served as a cornerstone of Ocala's public recreation program since the city acquired it in 1944, when the only other significant recreation facilities at that time were Garrick Field, Webb Field, the City Auditorium, and Tuscola Park. And then shortly after the war, of course, we started acquiring additional facilities, such as swimming pools and recreation centers. But before that, it was basically, the golf course pretty much was the cornerstone, that and Tuscola Park. And it's an Ocala tradition. You know, we have some tournaments that have been there, you know, almost a half a century. Well, it was a half a century this year, I guess, so. And other programs, even community events that aren't even golf-related that, you know, the community has come to rely on as a tradition at that course. So the next question is, what level of support are we willing to provide? Recognizing that the economy will turn around, do we stay the course? And then being the Recreation Parks Director, I like to compare it to other recreation opportunities. So in comparison with other public recreation programs, how do we measure up? When we evaluate the cost to operate a program, we typically consider the cost per person and then also the cost per contact hour. You know, with our community events program, we do the same thing. We ask how long that event's going to be, and we assign a certain dollar value to that, and then how many people it's going to impact. We do the same with most of our recreation programs. The net cost to operate, so I'm just going to throw some examples out there to give you a comparison. The net cost to operate both aquatic facilities, which are open approximately 16 weeks per year, is $160,000. So after we add up all our expense and subtract our revenue, it's costing the general fund $160,000 a year. That's a cost recovery of 39%, which means that it's being supplemented by the general fund at 61%. With approximately 35,000 swimmers a year, the general fund cost is $4.57 per person and $2.29 per contact hour, based on the fact that each admission buys you 2 hours. So in comparison, the projected cost to operate the Ocala Golf Club for 2011 is $332,000, just over that. That's a 78% cost recovery and a 22% general fund subsidy. With approximately 40,500 rounds in the year, the general fund cost is $8.21 per round and $1.64 per contact hour based on a 5-hour round of golf. So I just wanted to give you that comparison to show that Ocala Golf Club, when considered as a public recreation program, really measures up to what our other public recreation expenses are. And do we recognize that though golf is not all-inclusive, golfers are taxpayers too, and do they have the right to expect their recreation program to be supplemented just like the swimmer or any other recreation program? So options to consider. Do we continue with in-house operations and subsidize the golf operations as needed? And this is in staff's recommended order, I'll point out. Consider food and beverage catering options. This is a cost center that we think has great potential for growth. Banquet hall itself, we're making about $30,000 a year off of rentals, and one thing that the Hilton and the Holiday Inn and those types of organizations recognize is that you don't make money off the rental of the room, you make money off of the provision of the food and beverage. We're competing against other golf courses that, in addition to providing beer, also allow their customers to purchase liquor. So if we could extend the liquor license to include the provision of alcohol, and I want to point out that that would be only to our customers. The type of alcohol license we would try to obtain wouldn't allow us to serve as an open bar, so it wouldn't be like we were competing against the Tilted Hill. But it would allow us to provide liquor as an option to our customers. And then, in considering the food and beverage catering option, we would either handle that in-house, or we would consider getting a contractor to come in and handle the food and beverage. 54% of golf courses surveyed leased out their concession operation, and 18% of those are with the full management lease. So it is, food and beverage is the number one contracted out portion of a golf course. I thought it would be maintenance operations, but it's food and beverage. And then the other option is to consider contract management options. There are certain conditions that make a golf course right for this type of situation. I don't personally think we're there, but it's an option that certainly if you want to discuss, we can pursue it.
Any council have any questions, comments? Go ahead, Susan.
Right now, what food and beverages are available out there, and how are they?
So our food and beverage operation is strictly out of the snack bar. And we offer cold sandwiches, hot dogs. They do some sandwiches, like a Cuban sandwich that they can do on a press. And then from a beverage standpoint, we offer sodas and beer. And then we extend that to the snack bar. So the beverages and snacks, such as crackers and chips and that sort of thing, we also offer on the beverage part, I'm sorry. We don't offer a catering option at the banquet hall itself. We have a full catering kitchen that you can cook in. It's not just a warming kitchen that we could offer food and beverage, so that if someone rented our banquet hall, they would need to purchase their food from us, or we can make it optional. If we go to a liquor license, we would recommend including the banquet hall, which puts us in the business of, if they want to have a cash bar, then we would need to provide that bartender. They could still do BYOB if you want to bring your own alcohol, but if we're going to sell out, if they're going to sell alcohol or even sell tickets to their events, then we would have to provide that on the hall form. And there's other options. We could have them buy their liquor from us, even if they're providing it for free. And
is there any other job considered as far as like more food as well, or are we just talking about?
Well, right now we don't have, the kitchen that's at the snack bar is extremely small. So we don't really have the capacity to cook there. And we don't really have the resources to assign a cook over at the other building.
Well, we could do that. That's the stage of leasing that out.
Yes.
To a caterer and let them provide lunch or,
if we were going to lease out that part, we would recommend contracting out the snack bar too. Putting
right.
all that together.
Yeah, the room contracts together.
There's, and again, there's millions of options we could consider, but one thing we thought of is if you leased out the operator, there's caterers out there who just need a kitchen. And so if you could get a caterer to come in who could take that kitchen, they could cater outside events even from that kitchen. So there's not opportunity for someone to make money. You'll recall when we put out the RFP last time, it was to make that a restaurant. And there was a lot of capital investment that would have been required. We had to expand the parking lot, we had to have fire suppression system. There was a whole list of capital improvements at the city, and they wanted the city to make those investments, and we weren't willing to do that.
But yeah, I'm just thinking, I don't go out there obviously because I don't even know how to do it. But, I wouldn't be opposed to going and having lunch with a view, but that would be a very nice sort of atmosphere.
project that we could increase our revenues by at least $35,000 a year just in providing timber. And I think that's a low number. I mean, I think we're projecting a little low. So between our Valley Crest, I feel like between our Valley Crest contract revisions and the potential for increased revenue in the food and beverage side, that at a minimum we can close that operating gap that we're looking at. And, you know, then we have to start figuring out how we can start to put a dent in that debt service and internal services.
Mr. Blair.
Conversation for a number of years. I think the golf course is great. We're not, we haven't actually lost that amount of money that you're talking about. That's just what you're projecting for it.
Correct.
I mean, I think you're doing a good job. The team's doing a great job. Valley Crest is doing just an extremely good job. Everybody that was at the camp said that that's the best that they've ever seen in that golf course ever.
The liquor license can go a long way. I know that there's a heart throb for some people with that, and then for others, I mean, can't get around that this weekend. I mean, it's a completely different atmosphere from a bar than it is at the golf course, but it still is something that people ask for. It's something they get there. I mean, you know, Saturday night, Sunday, you know, night, Ken, I mean, it's just to have that potential there for us is just another, you know, tool in the toolbox, as Matt likes to say, to have some revenue generating. And it goes from a marketing standpoint, it goes to, you know, revenue generating standpoint. It's just what golf courses do. I mean, you know, a beverage cart that drives around on a Saturday or Sunday pulls up, I guarantee you they get, every other hole, somebody's going to ask you, you know, you got Bloody Mary in there, what have you got? You got Jack Cook in it? Nope, you know, and it's just, and so there's potentials there to, to continue to enhance that whole, you know, menu, if you will, that we've got out there. And people will come by, I tell you, you do that, people will come by in the afternoons and they'll come out, they'll get there, and you know, they want to get a beverage, but then all of a sudden, you know, it goes to the golf course and it starts there, and it's what, yeah, it's one of them. You know, you golfer, you just, you can only handle so many missed 4 putts, you know, 4 foot putts. you got to start doing something. But again, it's part of the ambiance of a golf course. I mean, it just is, and it's not. I know that there's been some. So, you know, we have juniors golfers, and we're looking at the first tee program, which I know you remember we've done that. We're continuing to formulate that, sending in the applications and looking for the grants that are coming. That's going to start enhancing junior golf again. I was a huge part of junior golf. The mayor was out there, and I can't, you that had been part of that. I mean, we had huge. Junior golf was a huge component to Muni and Pine Oaks. So we're going to continue that with the first tee. But it's really, you know, the thought of, hey, we're going to put, you know, juniors around, you know, in a bar is just, that's not what happens at a golf course. It's completely different. So, you know, if we can, I mean, I just, you know, I'd like the council to consider, you know, having staff to continue just the investigation, at least of that liquor license, what's all involved, how we would, I know you've been, you know, working on it, but just what it would look like from a cost standpoint, how we got to staff it. There's different things that we'd have to do, but at least look at it, you know, as that being an option to continue to dig into some of that. As when we started this 5 or 6 years ago, the biggest thing for me, and this is Susie and John, I don't think we had a plan 6, 7 years ago. It was there, it just didn't happen. There was Muni, and we just dealt with it in Pine Oaks, and we just sort of always plugged along. Golf was always kind of there. And those numbers, those deficits were getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and of course, you know, there just wasn't any you know, vision or plan. And so that's one of the biggest things, to be able to realize and embrace it, and where are we going, what are we doing, how, you know, and putting some cost to it. And so it's neat to see, at least, you know, again, going Sunday, what you're talking about, Ken, I mean, I had 30 people that are not from Ocala come up, and they just, if I lived here, I would absolutely be here every day. I would, and we're starting to see, quite honestly, you're talking about some of your numbers of these courses that are starting to be in financial strength. I mean, golf as a whole, that, you know, around the country, there are private golf courses that are shutting down, and it just, it's going to happen. That you start to hear people, I don't need to be a member anywhere else, I'm just going to start coming out here. And we're actually starting to gain a few people. I mean, believe it or not, a small handful, but there's people turning, I don't want to say turning in, but they show up at Muni before they even go to their own private club. So it's interesting to see that. But I just, you know, for starters, if we could at least that liquor license, at least start looking at that and having them come back, you know, maybe with an agenda item that says, full details, here's what it is, this is what it's going to cost us, this is how it would look, and then we can up or down, you know, as we do and decide that, so.
Let me ask you this question. One time when we did the golf course renovation, we were doing the clubhouse, we had talked about spending, you know, some money putting the actual kitchen in there. We never did that, correct?
No.
Yeah, but it was like.
But the kitchen over in the banquet hall is you can run a restaurant under there. I don't know if you've ever been in there. It is a full-fledged. It's a little gym sitting there. I mean, you could.
Like Councilwoman Nyman was saying, yeah, it might be a great idea to, you know, have something there where you can, you know, have a nice dinner or whatever, you know, somebody wants to contract it out. And ask something more than, you know, a lot of players and hot dogs, which are great.
Absolutely. But that's all. We're just trying to enhance it as much as we can and provide, you know, full service. But,
recognizing that gentleman back there.
Mr. Kennedy, get your name and address for the record, please.
Jack Kennedy, 2060 Southeast 34th Street. Our concerns about is the debt service being charged to the golf course at one time. Two city managers ago, Mr. Nugent made two recommendations to city council. Number one was to sell the East 9 at Pine Oaks to the Water and Sewer Department, $2.3 million. Number two was to take that money and rebuild the Muni Golf Course. And it was approximately $2 million at that time. Bids came in at $1.7 million, and then I think we subsequently used $600,000 to remodel the clubhouse. Well, our concern is, you know, even if you were to charge the bond interest to the city, of course, probably about 4%. I don't know what they sold for. But you know, 4% of that, $2 million, is $80,000. That's far cry from $173,000. My concern is, you know, the first thing you look at is raising the golf rate. I think the city council needs to do is just look at the operating expenses. And I think that's one of our main concerns is why is that interest rate so high? Thank you.
Okay. Who wants to tackle that?
I'm not sure what our interest rate is, but
John?
I think that the business plan recommendation was to sell the East 9 to offset the operating losses for at least 5 years, and we did that. And so as of the end of this fiscal year, we will have used all of those funds. And, you know, we carried not just a Cal Golf Club, but even Pine Oaks for several years. And then while Cal Golf Club was closed, although we did everything we could to mitigate the losses during that time, we did still have some staff costs and maintenance costs and things. So there was a pretty substantial loss at Ocala Golf Club Theater that we closed down to renovate. So as of the end of this year, we will have completed the proceeds from the sale of that East 9. So we are looking at how we're going to.
Go back to that slide that had the operating budget over here, because
So the debt service is paying $173,000 a year over the principal interest. That's just not the interest.
And so you know, we did pay off the old debt service. So we did already have debt service that we held off, but I can't tell you off the top of my head how much it was, but we did pay that off with the sale of the East Side. So that we didn't also have to roll that debt into the new debt.
Do you remember what that old debt was, Daniel? Was it about $550 or something like that?
I think so.
Okay, so that's paid off, and we've got the new, okay, so we're paying $132,000.
I want to throw in another piece of the puzzle, and this one really can create heartburn with some folks. Go ahead.
Non-departmental services, what is the $72,000?
So that's our cost for risk services, the liquor liability insurance on the buildings themselves. We don't pay for the insurance on that, and Clark reimburses us. So that number, that's totally Ocala, Golf Club, and then the facilities charges. We only have one vehicle in that fund, so we don't really have any very minimal fleet expenses. And that would just be operations, and then the actual facilities cost to help keep the facilities up. And you'll recall that number is a lot lower. It used to be just for Ocala Golf Club. I want to say over $140,000 just in facilities and risk and administrative allocations, not even counting food.
Yeah, $60,000 for accounting for Mr. Corley, and $45,000 fleet to change the oil 4 times a year, tractors.
We were at 400. They got to 450 1 year allocation for, I don't know, leasing, weed eaters and mowers back from the city, or leasing from yourself. It's neat that we're sitting here next to a train track here and sitting at a train station. We're moving forward on Magna, and it's a little bit separate issue, but it's not. The north, I don't know, we've got 35, 40 acres, I think, near Mattapinos we use currently for spray field, and we still get a little bit of subsidy for water and sewer, I think, for that spray field, Craig. I was going to say it's like 60 grand or something, a small number that we get. Just ask you to keep an open mind as we start going through with Magna, and the possibility of some of that acreage on the north of Pine Oaks, that 40 acres that is just sitting out there now with just a sprinkler sitting out there, maybe some high, may not be the highest and best use as we move forward. The transfer station that Magna's going to need from a rail standpoint. If we were able to site that on some of that property and build some sort of buffer from the golf course, still you maintain the Pine Oaks, the north and the south nines, but you know what I'm talking about for those of you. It comes off of 35th. The Pine Oaks runs all the way up to 35th, but the golf course, there's 40 acres in between 35th and the north, which is number three, all of that out there. The possibility of siting that transfer station on that property could be a huge potential for some of that property for the city to look at. OEU is big, and we create money with OEU, but getting into the transfer business, transfer rail station, and having that property utilized from that could be, there could be some windfall profits there that I think we could tap into to generate, for some more of this loss from golf. So I just want to throw that out there to consider, because a lot of things that does. We've talked about, I know Ms. Rich has brought up, the train traffic that may or may not be going across 27th Ave there as Magna starts its formation. And then, the rail spur is the big thing. The rail spur sits right there, basically runs right down just on the east side there of Pine Oaks. Having that transfer station there as compared to west of 27th Ave, keeping it on the golf course, helps a lot of the traffic issues. They're going back and forth across 27th and how that will look in future years. But utilizing, again, that 40 acres or something other than a sprinkler and some considerations. So I know I've thrown that to Matt as we move forward on Magna, and I just want to put that out there that could, I'm not saying it, just a potential thing for us to look at, to consider as we go forward with that. So I think there can be some huge potential there. So was there anything? Come on down. Thought I saw another hand back there. for the record, we need a name and an address.
Yes, George Vazali, 1922 Northeast 3rd Street, subdivision of the City of Mayor and Council, like you. I've been a volunteer at the union for about 7 years now, almost 2 years on the Golf Advisory Board. And myself, I come in contact, being on the Stars, on a daily basis, people from all over the community, all over the country, actually, that come here to visit, have family, friends, and come and enjoy the facility that we have at our community. With all positive comments since our renovation, I mean, unbelievable, not one person has said they haven't enjoyed the renovation, even though maybe their score didn't reflect it, but did have a great time. And this is daily basis. We have a gym, and it's just started. And our facility could be probably, you know, one of the better municipal courses in the country. And I'm not saying that because I do play the course and I work at it. I don't want to see it dissolve. But comments from people that play all over the country. I had a gentleman last week that said that he was from Northern California area, played Poppy, Spy Hill, near where Pebble Beach is. He said, this is probably best municipal course it's ever played in his entire life. So that was a compliment to us. And, you know, I'm a volunteer. I love the play. I love the course. It's like my home and my little course. And many of the volunteers that are here feel the same way. A facility that is immaculate. We had our tournament this past weekend, and people from all over Florida, Tampa, and so forth, that come up with plans. And it's just a facility that, you know, we want to see continue on. As I said, it's just the beginning, just the start. Who knows in a few years what might happen with our facility. You know, I talk about a PGA event here Sunday. So anyway, you know, we were just talking about redevelopment areas. I don't know of anyone that would come into a community, young families, which we want to have here, coming here because we have a distribution center or we have a warehouse facility, but certainly come here because we have a facility like the Meeting Outlet. Thank you, Mayor, Council, for your time.
Okay. Anybody, anything else? I guess the direction, I mean, we get to the, you're looking, I mean, to continue the liquor license option and seeing getting more detail for that, and then the possibility of the, like Susie's saying, the food and beverage. I mean, is there anything else that y'all are looking for here today on that?
No, actually, I just want to do two things. One is simply update you on the financial of the course. Two, again, to fill for staff's efforts to, again, develop better business options for the course. And I want to meet with you is to continue doing that. And once we have that done, we'll report back to you.
Okay. Anything else? Anyone else in the audience? Anything else? CRAs or golf or anything for that matter? We're just, the mic is open. Just come down here. That's what we do. Matt?
I have one item to do for you.
Okay. All right. We don't have anything else on those two, so.
Just want to give you a gentle reminder about Thursday's board meeting. It'll be held at a traditional place, the second floor of City Hall.
Don't walk over here, Kent. Walk back to City Hall again. Back at City Hall.
Walk all the way to City Hall. Everybody better keep you talking, but we're grateful for your willingness to engage on these important topics. The topic of discussion Thursday will be Project Tula. We're going to have three phases of the discussion Thursday. The first phase of the discussion will be having Jose Cortez give you a high altitude overview of their business plan, the hydroponics, and what that means. When he's done, Mark Mondale is going to lay out the terms of the deal in some detail, talk to you about that. And then when he's done, Jimmy Gooding is going to get up and give you a copy of a draft agreement and kind of go over high altitude, just let you know the way it's laid out. so that as you meet on the weekend, you will be better served with that initial input. That's going to take place Thursday. We're not looking for an action item Thursday. The staff's expectations that the agreement will be ready by Tuesday of next week. We hope so. All indicators suggesting that will be there. If it's not, of course, we'll just keep pushing it out until it's ready. I don't want to let council members got to be rushed to push this and adopt it. You got to feel comfortable with it, and you got to be willing to obviously invite off on it. Okay, I will note that when we set Thursday's meeting, I was unaware that I had an executive committee meeting in Orlando. One of the items on that agenda is a suspension of the financial hedging program. I need to be there for that discussion. So if there's permission, I'm going to ask for a repeat from Thursday in Orlando in great hands with Mark and Jimmy. If that's okay with you, I'll be seeing them later.
Mark, for sure. I don't know about Jimmy. We'll still hold out. No, but absolutely appreciate you going out and taking that. That's one of those. We just got a lot of stuff going on. I appreciate you doing that. So that's definitely your presence there is definitely appreciated. So that'd be big. Anything else? So we're back Thursday at 11:30. Or no, we did. We went.
Lunch, yeah, 11:30.
Yeah,
11:30
Thursday, City Hall.
Got that.
10:30, somebody call Ken, tell him where he's got to be. We are adjourned.